And now I have here a lot of the original documents to be able to see. So they're coming out from Chibuchim, and you're going to see the original documents, and they are very rare. You'll see why. Because they kept secret this thing. These things are, wasn't the most amazing story that happened.
So let's go see a little bit here. Okay. Now, let's talk about what happened, right? And we're going to talk about the messianic movements, the mystical messianic movements. Shabtai Tzvi was one example. I don't think, and I don't want to ever focus on Shabtai Tzvi as a unique situation. As we're going to see, this was, Shabtai Tzvi was the right person at the right time, and there were many others. It was a conclusion of a long era that happened at that time. And starting is to talk about for us is the 16th century. 16th century is a watershed moment in the world history, but for sure also in the Jewish world. Now, what is it? The new Jewish currents of the 16th century. Number one is the Beit Yosef and the end of the Rishonim. You know that there is a periodization. Jewish history moves in almost like a continuum line until there is a time of periodization. Periodization is a time when history breaks. In all world history, there are periods of breaks that there is a break and it moves on. That break is when there is a mega change. Now, most scholars who say the periodization is not at the time, they don't realize that. But they look and they, after self-reflection, many years later, they're going to think that their time in history is broken from the ones before. There was a change. Let me give you an example by us, right? The Holocaust was such a thing that created periodization, right? We left Europe, we came to America, and that created a break in history. Break in history that in Eretz Yisrael there was the new Yishuv, that's why the Yishuv that comes after the war is called the new Yishuv. And in America, that people see the world as a different world. And there are breaks, and that's an idea of consciousness, right? So this idea happened in the 16th century. We know that. When the Beit Yosef put out his collection, which is called the Beit Yosef, he collected all the people inside, and all the rabbis which are mentioned in the Beit Yosef saw themselves, the world saw them as Rishonim, and the people who were outside the Beit Yosef saw themselves as different. They couldn't argue anymore. It was a break in history. Interestingly enough, the Beit Yosef did that, right? This is the canonization. One day we can talk why the Beit Yosef caused that. But the Marshal at that time already felt that this is going to happen. And he says, well, the Beit Yosef is putting everybody in and he's creating this conclave of rabbis alive and dead, who from now on, these people in and the people out, they are breaking apart. So there was a very big break in Jewish history, the Rishonim and the Achronim. Now, in historiography, that happens. Yosef Chaim Yerushalmi has this idea, and he says, as you well know, that Jews were never interested in historiography. But there's a great book by Yosef Chaim Yerushalmi. He was a celebrated professor of Jewish history at Columbia University. I actually got a master's from him. And he, one of the best, I tell you, was one of the fundamental books on Jewish historiography. It's called Zahor. And Zahor, what he says is, Jews were never interested in history. That's the reality of it. We never had historiography. They were the only historiography that we had was Shalshelet HaKabbalah, just a chain of rabbis. And that was it. There's no history. But, and the reason is, you could decide and talk about it, and there's a lot to discuss. But, interestingly enough, in the 16th century, there is an explosion of historiography. There are many, there are actually 10 books, Jewish history books, written at that time. Right? And I have here, I just brought to you the original copy of something called the Shevet Yehuda. Okay? This is the Shevet Yehuda that was printed at that time. You'll be able to see, it's a book of the 16th century, so be careful. But this is the Shevet Yehuda. Shevet Yehuda is interesting for many reasons. Yerushalmi passed away his objective in life was writing a critical edition of this book, the Shevet Yehuda. It was one of the 10. The Shevet Yehuda, Yehuda ibn Verga. Yehuda ibn Verga was one of the people who got expelled from the expulsion, and he wrote this book. Now, this book is fascinating, called Shevet Yehuda. Now, what's interesting about the Shevet Yehuda, he's the only one who talks about the Sivat Tivit. You know, there is the people talking, people reflecting. What happened? Hasiba hatibit, natural cause. Right? The natural cause. Because people are talking about the expulsion. Why did God expel us? Why did we go through the Spanish expulsion? But the Spanish expulsion was a... And people at that time, the 16th century, right? Were thinking about the 1500s. Why is that? So, as we know, the Chosidiyavit, right? We did the philosophy. We did this, we did that. And he says, in this book, I'll tell you, the natural cause. We Jews were tax collectors. We lived in a very luxury life, and we basically poked the goyim, so would you expect them to like us? That's it. That's what Sibat TV. And that caused an uproar. What, you're giving a natural cause? This is supernatural. We Jews don't run on history, right? The famous idea that Rav Shimshon von Hirsch, that we don't follow the course of history. This is the book that says yes. Edim Verga.
So when did he come out of Spain?
Yeah, the 1500s, 16th century. Yeah, he's
post-expulsion.
He's writing. He was thinking about it. Why did we deserve to be expelled? And I won't go into it. I don't want to go because I don't want to digress. But this is a fundamental book, right? But this didn't happen. Only the 16th century. The 16th century also is the Renaissance of Agadah. I actually give a course at the University. This is the beginning of Agadah. We know till the 16th century, we didn't deal with Agadah, right? There are very few books in Agadah. We had we know Chiddush HaRash, where the Rashba wrote the Pirush on Agadah. But he writes that basically as a way he apologized. There's an apologetic written in the beginning of the book. So the 16th century, we have Renaissance of Agadah. Bein Yaakov writes the Rif on the Agadah. He collects all the Agadot. We have the Meorei Naim. The Meorei Naim writes the famous Eidei Vezayin, the Min Nedumim. He writes a Pirush on the Agadah because very controversial. The Maral comes to argue with him. So Agadah goes, and that's the beginning of the 16th century also. Agadah goes and becomes a... Yes.
Agadah is coming from the Talmud.
Yeah, but as if you know, and I would, again... Well, this is a 1 hour talk about something that takes at least 10 hours to do. So we're going to have to go. The issue is that the Agadah, if you look at Agadah, right? The Geonim told you, don't look at Agadah. Agadah, you don't pass on Agadah. Agadah is somebody's way of looking at things, but it's not binding. Ein sumchim al Agadah. And it also it's crediting of Agadah. Agadah was discredited in the Talmud. When the Talmud was read, basically, honestly, how do you run in yeshivas? In yeshiva, you see Agadah, you just run it. What do you think Agadah? Agadah was discredited. In the 16th century, Agadah becomes a topic of conversation. They wrote a book only on Agadah.
Didn't the Rambam himself say that Agadah is just things that are really beyond our comprehension?
Yes. If you look at the guide, he goes to say that, but he's apologetic.
And that was well before this.
Yes, but he tells you, don't learn. It's well beyond your understanding, don't learn it. The Rambam, if you look at it, very interesting, in the guide, in the book, he tells you, there are the ideas, and he tries always, first of all, he never writes a Pirush, which is called a running Pirush. He goes to Agadah to justify philosophy. He's trying to set what's known a round peg in a square hole.
And this Kufa is what the Enyakov Mora, they put Agadah on a pedestal?
On the pedestal, it's a book only on Agadah, collecting and explaining it, running Pirush, that's it. Look at the Meorei Naim. Meorei Naim writes his book, right? Meorei Naim is a fascinating book. There's a great translation called The Light of Our Eyes, to explain Agadah, basically what's called Keseder, a running Pirush Agadah. The Maral does that. Agadah becomes a focus in the topic of learning. But only 16th century, before that wasn't. The Rambam, it comes to excuse, you don't understand. The Rashba says, I'm only doing this to go against the Rambam. The right is every cause of philosophy, and he's pushing you too much of philosophy. I want to move away from philosophy. That's what
he
does.
The Marshal might be an interesting bridge. Because
the Marshal was there, but this is the time.
Where did he live exactly?
It's the 1670s, 1670s. Afterwards, this is the post, the beginning of this. You could credit this to the Ein Yaakov. Ein Yaakov did that, right? Ein Yaakov does that. Yaakov and Chabib. Now, and also the Renaissance of Kabbalah. There is a whole Kabbalah movement going in Tzfat. In Tzfat, which basically that movement in Tzfat, also the 16th century, becomes the most, it becomes explosive with their Arizal. This is their Arizal. Men did their Arizal and they go and they do all these strange things. So all of it is happening in 16th century. And the question is why? What happened in 16th century? Jewish history is being written. The Rishonim are closed. They go into gap into a new world. And you have now this idea of focus on Agadah and Kabbalah. Why is that? Okay? So to go ahead and to explain this. Your head now. No. Agadah was in the Talmud. Was it by Rav Asher's time? Was not debatable. But the Agadah was the Gemara. But the Golden Gemara says, don't learn Agadah. Don't learn Agadah. In Sumchim al Agadot. And everything, if you look at the Gionim, even the Rambam says, the Rambam goes to explain, he says you can't understand most of them. Most of them are ideas, and only the cognoscenti. Don't spend time on
them. Whenever he wants to huh? So he argues with them.
He would argue all the time. Okay, I don't want to go.
So if they spent almost 1,000 years dismissing the Agadah, why? What? How did they?
What happened in the 16th century?
How did they justify starting to focus
okay,
on it?
Again, we have a whole course of this. We can't go and give like because this is not topic tonight. But that's all to tell you the 16th century.
Dr. Bergman mentions in passing about the end of canonization of periods. Let him get to false messiah.
The false messiah. Because I'm just going to tell you, the false messiahs, the mystical messiahs were not just a shot that just jumped out of the boat. That's why the mistake. I told you, I'm going to tell Tashi. Actually, I could say something new. This is my take on Shabbat Tzvi, okay? If you want to read the story of Shabbat Tzvi, I'm going to give you in one slide. But if you want to know, you can go on the web, right? I'm just going to tell you the context, how to see Shabbat Tzvi. Shabbat Tzvi, as I'm going to show you, is not something unique. It's something natural that came about. So the 16th century, of all these Jewish movements, which are very funny to understand what happened. But you look at what happened in the historical context, 16th century. 16th century is an amazing century. Number one, the printing press. You realize that the printing press is the greatest, the printing, movable printing press, the end of the 15th century, Gutenberg, becomes the most, it is probably the greatest invention in the last 1,000 years, by far, right? Because it made knowledge available, made democratization of learning. You didn't have to sell your house to buy a book, right? And this becomes very much. So now people have access to books, and we as Jews took that to ourselves, meaning we, the first Incunables are the books which are printed between 1500. They're called the cradle of the printing press. A lot of them were Jewish books because the Jews loved that. So we took it. So there was dissemination of learning. The rabbit is out of the box. Once upon a time, for you to learn, you have to go to yeshiva, there was one book, and you have to be part of the book. There was a little controlled learning. This is the opening to printing press. Clearly, there was a humongous revelation because people supposedly never knew existed, number one. Number two, the Spanish expulsion. You realize what's unique about the Spanish expulsion? It's not because it was the first expulsion of Western Europe, but because it was the last expulsion of Europe. What's the first expulsion of Western Europe? It's England in the 13th century. And it ends with the Spanish expulsion. The Jews are out of Western Europe. So that was a watershed moment, like the Holocaust, that you saw yourself into a new place. You were so shocked to see the Spanish community having to be displaced, that required that shock people. And therefore, people needed to find a consolation, meaning. So that's why they went into new ideas, okay? Number three, the burning of the Talmud. Do you know why Agadah becomes very popular? Because there was nothing else to learn, as you'll see. And I forgot to bring you something. The burning of the Talmud is, you know that Talmud was burned for the second time during the 16th century. And what happened? I'll tell you just quickly the story. The story was that there was a Rambam printed by one printed called Bragadin, and another printer came out, the Maran Padua, came with another version of the Rambam, right? And the printing press, they printed a second set of Rambams, the Maran Padua. Now, there's not enough of a market for two Rambams. So there was a huge fight. And they went to the Rambam, the famous Chuvas HaRamot, Rambam passing like the Rambam of the Maran Padua. So Bragadin, the other printer, got very upset. And he felt slighted. So he went to the Pope and says, you know something? You know the Talmud is full of blasphemies. You guys should burn the Talmud. I don't understand how the Inquisition at that time, the Holy, the Inquisition office was fully operational. How do you let the Talmud go away? So it's interesting enough, the Rambam's first burning was the first burning of the Talmud was because of the Rambam. The second burning is also because of the Rambam. So the Rambam, always the Rambam is somewhere the second, the Talmud got burned.
Must be doing something right.
Yeah, I'm telling you, this is the burning of the Talmud. So there was no Sforim. If you want, I have a lot of those Sforim. I was going to bring it here, but I'll show you. There was the same Sforim, that the one that survived the fire. So there was no Sforim available, meaning, so what could they learn? So the Agadata became very, why Agadata became very popular? Because Agadata is not the Talmud. And most important, at that time, the printing of the Zohar. The Zohar gets printed in the 16th century. Because you know why? You know whose Haskoma the Zohar receives? And I was going to bring you today, I forgot to bring you the Cremona, but you see the Cremona Rambam, the Cremona Zohar has the approbation of the church. The Pope gave approbation to the Zohar. So the Zohar was a kosher book, that you could have it. So everybody, you didn't have Gemara to learn, you learned the Zohar. Now, why did he approve the Zohar? Because the Zohar talks about, which we're going to talk about, the Trinity. It talks what's called about triple head. We know that, as anybody who comes to Shiur, know that the world is this triple idea, right? The Zohar views the Zohar. The Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the world with this triple head, which is Chesed, Din, Zkod, Cheder, Chesed, Din, Rachamim. And so the church said, aha, you see, the reason, because we Jews didn't want to print the Zohar, because the Zohar was not supposed to be in the printing press, imagine to let the Zohar out of the box, we didn't want to. So the Rabbonim did not want the Zohar out. So, but they went to, so the Pope realizes, aha, they don't want to print the Zohar, because the Zohar is going to justify the Trinity. So let's print the Zohar. So the first Zohar, I was going to show you, I didn't bring it here. The first Zohar has the outcome of the church. So that's the Zohar. So now the Zohar is out of the printing. People don't know how to learn. They learn the Zohar, they learn Kabbalah. So this also, at the printing press, people are exposed to ideas that they never saw before. With the Zohar, it was the domain of a very small number of people. It becomes a public domain. Okay, don't forget about that. Also, the new continents. Imagine the 16th century is exposed to people that they never knew existed. Imagine. That all the famous descubridores, the famous conquistadores that went, they saw a world that they never saw before, right? Which led to the scientific discoveries. This is the beginning of early modern science. How does early modern science? Does anybody know what is the beginning of early modern science? It's a book called The Revolutions of Copernicus. Copernicus, in the end of the 14th, 15th century, writes Revolutions. And what's Revolutions? He says the world believed before in Ptolemy, the Almagest, that the world was something called geocentric, meaning the world, everything went around the earth. And he said, a second, this, you have to come up with all millions of ideas. The truth is, it's all the opposite. It's heliocentric. We surround the sun. At that time, as you know, the church in the 17th century, Galileo goes against it and says that's heretic. But at that time, the church thought it was great. So now they are giving early modern science, and that's the beginning of chemistry. So people are exposed to these new crazy ideas. Imagine, you thought you today that was simple for 1,000 years, that everything goes around the earth, and now just switch. Okay, imagine the collection of curiosities. Because the world became now the conquistadores, they decided to collect and to bring all crazy things to Europe. So they had this closet. Everybody knows you should look for Rudolf II. Rudolf II, the emperor of the Holy Empire, of the Roman Holy Empire, he brought things. They brought crazy things from this country, right? Skulls, animals they never saw. So they were exposed not to only people. They thought the world is a crazy world. See, imagine how people in the 16th century were feeling. They were very, they just changed how cosmology works. You see people who we never saw before. It's all these Indians who look like crazy people. And now you have the Zohar, which is a part of Torah that you never heard of it. So clearly that was a humongous psychological change. And this is the beginning of Renaissance at that Fontes. The Renaissance told you that whatever you read here today was distorted. Go back to the originals and reread the originals. So now they tell you not only the world has changed, what you learned till now is all wrong. So clearly that had a huge impact. And we know such a thing called Zeitgeist. Zeitgeist is the spirit of the times. The spirit of the times being, and the Jewish community had a humongous impact. You saw the Agartha that comes out. They start narrating the story of Agartha. They say, well, these amazing stories are in the Talmud. Not only we're seeing these crazy people coming up, look at the Gemara Bavra Bavra Chana. They have this crazy sea monster. They say, well, fits with the times. The Zohar, the Kabbalah. So you could see that this was a time, a very magical time. This is a psychological transformation of civilization. It's the beginning of the modern science, the beginning of the continents, etc. Okay? So as you see, this leads to something. Okay? We'll see in a second. Now, let's go to the 17th century. The 17th century, so imagine the 16th century, people are exposed to these new ideas. And by the way, people, if you look at what was happening in Tzfat, you hear the craziest stories in Tzfat. The people, the Arizal, he goes around and he says, here's Abaye buried, this is Rava buried. He turned the whole Galilee into a huge cemetery. And then he's speaking to those souls, and the souls are talking. And then you have the story that the Beis Yosef, the biggest Rav, has a magid, has an angel that comes and talks to him, and tells that his wife is really a male. And if you look at the stories, you have to understand that, I give you one story, about the magid Meshorim, the Beis Yosef was the god of Hador. The poison. And he had a magid. He wrote a sefer called Magid Meshorim. And in the Magid Meshorim, he says that he asked the Magid Meshorim, he's married to a wife, a second wife, and she can't have children. So he asked the Magid Meshorim, the Malach, why not? And the Malach tells him, because your wife is really a male in the body of a female. He says, 1 second, but my wife, the second wife, was married to somebody else before and she had children. He says, yes, because her husband was a female. So I'm going to tell you, you just have to realize that this is like, to the point, people don't realize. I'm going to tell you something. You understand? There
so
is.
The male had a child.
It's basically, it doesn't matter, but those things are magical time, to the point that the Marshal, it's a famous story. The Arizal, they saw what was going on in Tzfat, and the Marshal wanted to put everybody in Kherem. Because he said, well, this is a crazy world, right? So we know something very interesting. We know that the Arizal, when he wrote his stuff, he said that there's only one Talmud that has the authority to write down his ideas. Who is that? The
Haritah.
Now, the world accepts the Marisruk. Reb Tzodek, the Sfaradim don't accept him, but the Reb Tzodek accepts the Marisruk. And Reb Sosruk also has a Talmud, but here the Arizal doesn't mention him. And the question is, why not? If he is reliable, and we know because we know that the Sora Mamoris comes from there, and we have some more we've hold of. So why does he know? So the Lubavitcher Rebbe writes, because the Marisruk, when the Arizal gave the idea to follow Rav Chaim Vital, the Marisruk was away. Where was he? So the Lubavitcher writes, the Tzabach Tzedek, that he had gone at that time to the Marshal, to the other God Lador, to explain to him who the Arizal was, that the Arizal has to show Shunabi put in Kherem. He was going to excommunicate the Arizal and the whole community in Tzfat after he heard all the stories. And the Marisruk went there for that. That's what the Tzfat said, right? You agree or don't agree? That's it. So the Rama Mifano. The Rama Mifano is the Talmud of Marisruk. It's the Kabbalah of Marisruk. We are Mekabbalah because we believe that that's it. So you realize that this is a very interesting time. And you realize that this, the Zohar that they just were exposed, says the Zohar is Chelek Alef Kuflametes Beis, right? Bishnat Ayovel Hazot Tashuv Ishlachato. In this year of the Yovel, Hazot Tashuv Ishlachato, it's the time to go back. Says the Zohar, in the year 5000, okay, 408, which is 1648, you are going to go back to Eretz Yisrael. So there was a humongous expectation. They get the Zohar, and the Zohar says clearly, everybody saying, the Zohar says, 1648, the beginning of the 17th century, the first time they see the Zohar, Mashiach is coming. And what happened at that time? We know that in 1648 is the Gzeiras Tachvetach. Khmelnytsky, right? Bogdan Khmelnytsky and the Cossack massacres, they destroyed Poland. Not Poland, Ukraine. This was the terrible destruction of the Jews. So when they were expecting Mashiach to come, instead of Mashiach coming, there was this massive destruction. So you realize that people are in shock that the Zohar that they just got says, Tashuvi Shalachazot, and everybody knew this Zohar. Everybody knew at that time. How do you know? Because we know that Rav Shimshim Astropola, it was one of the was one of the victims. One of Doishim was killed in the what you call it, in the Zeros Tachvetah. He writes, we were expecting the Mashiach. And instead of that, there was a terrible destruction. So remember the shock that people are. People are seeing all this world, this upheaval, which is called the spiritual cultural upheaval. They are expecting Mashiach in the book that they just got, and instead of that, they have a humongous terrible thing. Now, and the issue is at that time that people, they're the Kedoshim of that time, they said, aha, I know what the Pshat. Kelmaniki is not Mashiach, he's Goyg u'Magog. And they came out of this. These are gematrias that came at that time. Okay? They said, Chevli Mashiach is the gematria, Tavchet, 1648. And we know the Chamil, his name was Chmil, right? This guy, Chmilniki, they called the Chmil. So the Chmil, Chet, Menu, this Chevli Mashiach, Yevol Lachem. So the Kedushim are saying this. So now there's the expectation, aha, you see, the Zohar was right. But the Zohar was right that this is not Mashiach, this is Chevli Mashiach, this is Goyg u'Magog. So you remember how the communities, and at that time, it's amazing how without the internet, without telex, the information flew like crazy in the Jewish population because of the printing press, they were able to take this Pashkevil and these notes that they had. If you go to my house, you see all the notes that they had at that time that they posted it. So you had that. So people, there was a huge expectation.
Now, what makes such a monstrous mistake?
No, it's not a mistake. You're going to see that. If you want to see Ari ben Mistorin, passed away, wrote a guess, wrote a letter on Erev Pesach, and please do me a favor, the book is available, is you should read it. What he wrote, and my idea, the whole idea he wrote the Sefer is to answer this question. How could this be wrong? Because he writes, it's a fascinating, but that's a 70, but that time he didn't know, the time they were faced on this. Now, you realize that whatever happens by us, happens by the Goyim also. The zeitgeist, the spirit of the times. There's nothing that happens only by the Jewish community. There's no such a thing. Now, what's the cause and effect? Causality? So the Tzaddik will say that the Jews bring it to the Goyim. We probably understand that zeitgeist, things pollinate. The same way, right, the same time that Newton was thinking about calculus, he had Leibniz in Germany thinking about calculus. All their lives, they fought who found calculus first. Doesn't exist. I always say Professor Leibniz came up with the idea of the stump together with Shammah Friedman. Who came for it? That's it. Well, the idea is it pollinates. But at the same time you had Luther, the Reformation was the beginning of the millenarians. They believed Jesus was coming again. And you had Protestants, the Protestants were believing in that everything got restored. We're going to go back to the kingdom of Jesus. Puritanism is built on that. And millennialism. The millennials were the ones who believed that the year 1500, 1600, Mashiach will come. So there was expectation, not only by us because of the Zohar, everybody was expecting this. And this is the spreading of mystical messianism.
Why did the Goyim think that Mashiach was? What made it?
Because they believe, right? Because only the book of Revelations. The book of Revelations, the issue is, if you know Protestantism, is a big machlokes, if the book of Revelations is real or not. So everybody was talking about the book of Revelations. The book of Revelations says the kingdom of Jesus will be restored before the rapture. There is a thing, they believed it. And it was a big thing because Luther was, the whole idea was, is the book right or the book wrong? Everybody was talking about the millenarians. Now, which is interesting, and I have one of his books here. I did not bring it, the Rembrandt. But you know that Rembrandt did illustrations of a Jewish book. The Jewish book, Shemnash Ben Yisrael. Shemnash Ben Yisrael in what you call Amsterdam. He was also expecting Mashiach to come. So in 1650, he decided that Mashiach to come. He decided the reason Mashiach is not, in 1648, Mashiach didn't come, is because Mashiach has to bring people from Arba Kamfot Aretz. And England is called, does anybody know the name of England in French? It's called Angleterre, the Anglo of the earth. So he says, it says the Mashiach has to take the Jews there back and forth Aretz. And the Angleterre and the Kamfot Aretz, the missing Jews, that's how Mashiach didn't come. So what did he have to do? To bring the Jews back to England. So he goes, he wrote at that time Pietra Gloriosa. He actually got Rembrandt to do the drawings of the book. He's the only etching for the book. He did another one, but the only real etching of the book was Rembrandt did for Nashim and Yisrael on the famous stone of Mashiach. That he thought that that stone would travel. That's the stone of the Melech, that's the stone of the Mashiach. But he thought that he has to bring Mashiach back. And he went, and he went to London, and he wrote a book, which you have here, the original, I'm going to show you. He wrote it in four languages, right? And it's called, look at the size. This is the book that Menashe ben Yisrael wrote. And it's called The Hope of Israel. Okay? And this is the Hebrew version. He wrote it in English, in Spanish, in Dutch. In English, Hebrew, Spanish, and Dutch. Four languages. He wrote, and this is the book, that he was going to convince the English that they should bring Mashiach, they should bring, allow the Jews back, because if they allow the Jews back, the millionaires will come back. And we know that at that time, you had the people. Okay, so it's just this. This is the Prayer of Glories. This is actually the etching of Rembrandt that he did on Mashiach. This is the statue of the thing that you throw the stone, and he did. And he convinced, and the truth is, it's very funny, because when he went to convince the Jews to get into the England, he couldn't convince. Cromwell was convinced, right? But the Parliament, the House of Commons, they wrote books back and forth if Mashiach should come, if they shouldn't come. The Somach Lekes. And in the end, what was the decision made at that time by Cromwell is, you guys can stay, but we cannot give you permission to stay. So the Jews stay. So Menashe ben Yisrael goes back, and he Mamish thought the Mashiach opportunity to come has been lost because the Jews are not accepted, and he left. But it's interesting enough that he left. He passed away in 1660, give or take. At that time, right afterwards, Cromwell died, his son came in, and the monarchy came back to England. And what they did was, they took back, they actually burned Cromwell in effigy, and they took his body, they burned it. And everything that Cromwell had done, they reversed. Every single thing that he did, they reversed. So they came the question of the Jews, do we have to reverse or not? But since the Jews were never officially allowed to come in, so there was nothing to reverse, so the Jews stayed. So Enochram, this book is what allowed the Jews to come back to England. If we go to England, this is Menashe ben Yisrael. Menashe ben Yisrael brought the Jews back to England because of this book, and he brought it because he brought Mashiach who come. So imagine the expectations. Now the Jews are in England, Mashiach is ready to come. So it was a powder keg waiting for Mashiach to come, until we finally have somebody who decided to seize the opportunity. And his name is Shabtai Tzvi. So you realize that Shabtai Tzvi, that doesn't come out of that. There was such an expectation, this Zohar. Now they see everything is falling, meaning all the pieces are falling, all these changes, all these miracles. And in the end, nothing surprised anybody. I told you, the people, men, females are males, the males are females, they have Indians coming in, the whole science, the sun is backwards. Everybody's expecting this was a world, the people were expecting miracles and waiting for Mashiach. So this is what happens, and this is the time of Shabtai Tzvi. Now, what is the story of Shabtai Tzvi? Shabtai Tzvi was born Tisha B'Av. Yes or no? Kvesnish. I don't think there was at that time a very accurate recording. Yes.
What did the non-Jews think Mashiach was?
We're going to see. I have here the picture. I'm going to show you. Here you have the original picture. This is an original, so be careful. How are they going to portray this whole Shabtai Tzvi?
What do they mean, though?
Like a Jesus. You see this. You see the picture. You see, this is how they viewed at that time Shabtai Tzvi. So you're going to see the picture of how the goyim saw us. But they thought that this is Jesus again. This is the Jewish Jesus. Finally, they got the truth, and we had somebody like that. So a physical Mashiach, etc. They were super happy, because they also thought it's called the Fifth Monarchy. In London, they decided, okay, maybe Mashiach's coming for us also. So everybody's expecting Mashiach at the same time. So imagine, this was like, everybody was reinforcing. It was like truly expectations galore. Everybody's expecting it. Now, 1648, the year of, I think he was then 22, he gets married and he divorces right away. His wife asks for a divorce because he decided that he can't, she's not the right wife. A whole scandal on his first wife.
So he was a little manic. He came across a little manic.
He was a little manic. A little manic to say, Gershon Scholem, you have here, I gave you the bibliography if you want to read. It has 1,000 pages to say how the guy was completely crazy, right? And Achanami, for sure. Now, in 1650, he starts, antinomian behavior. Antinomian behavior is, he's the famous one who says, Mati Rasuri. Torah betela lasidlova, lasidlova de bin Torah. You know, the mitzvah betela lasidlova. There is a very big strain of the Moroni believe that mitzvah betela lasidlova. There's no mitzvah lasidlova. He says, Mashiach is coming. There is an idea of matir asurim. Matir asurim, that you're matir, isurim. Not matir, asurim, matir, isurim. And he decides antinomian behavior. And he, one of the first things he does, he says, what's Mashiach? What's the definition of Mashiach? That you could utter Yud Kivavki. And he starts uttering Yud Kivavki. It's known that the later years, he goes to the shul of the Arizal. The Arizal wasn't there anymore. And he breaks the door and he says, Shem Shemayim. Because this is the idea that you could utter Yud Kei Vav Kei. So that's what he does, this crazy behavior. Now, as you could imagine, in 1653, the Rabbonim of Smyrna go crazy and they throw him out. They put him in Cherem, they excommunicate, they throw him out. And he is viewed as like this crazy guy that his mom is like. And every community that he goes to Thessaloniki, and there he marries a Sefer Torah. There is a chassid between him and the Torah. That Yom Chasunosay, Yom Sim Chaslim, Yom Chasun, that this crazy stuff he's doing, and every place he goes, he put in Cherem. Everyone he goes. In Constantinople, he goes ahead and he goes out on the street with a baby carriage with a fish. Why? Because he thought Mashiach will be born in Mazal Dagim. And he, for some reason, saw that he was Mazal Dagim, even though he was born in Tisha B'Av. How do you get pieces or? That's what he thought. So he goes with his fish and Constantinople. They actually decided to give him Malchus and to put him in jail. He is finished. They think the guy is a nut. He's involved in Kabbalah. And then the word is in 1664, is the lady Sara Bat Meir. Sara Bat Meir is a lady she survived the communist from Poland. She survived the Xeris. She found out she was raised by a nun or whatever, by a thing, in a convent, and then she becomes Jewish and she becomes a prostitute. She becomes a Zohar, she becomes a prostitute. But he says, she was Jewish, but she was raised.
She survived the massacre.
Because he is going to say that this is his Zik. That's what he says.
So where's Smyrna?
Smyrna is in Turkey.
Israel.
Smyrna is an unbelievable place. We're going to see the Smyrna. So it's Turkey, Izmir. So this guy married Sara Bat Meir. So what happened to the Sara Bat Meir story? Now, this guy was going to be basically truly in the footnotes of history. And the guy's a crazy guy. But then Natan Azati, a 20-year-old guy from Datan Rav Aza, from Yerushalayim, and he is the Paul. You realize that Jesus only became Jesus because of Paul. And in fact, in other words, every message you need to find a good shliach to publicize. You need a publicist. And it doesn't change anything, right? You need Twitter, you need something. Trump can't get his message, he didn't have Twitter, right? At that time, we didn't have Twitter. Natan Azati to the rescue. This guy, Natan Azati, is a very charismatic guy, and also he's known to have people who saw miracles, so they saw miracles. He's a guy about mercy, right? And he is very versed in Darizal. He was a very big Chacham Dior, and he realizes that Shabtai Tzvi, with all his Mishigasim, he had a very, very interesting approach to Kabbalah. So in 1664, he says that he has a messianic message, that he found a lost manuscript that says that it will be a Mashiach that is going to come, that Mashiach is going to be called Shabtai. In 1665, he goes to meet Shabtai Tzvi. Shabtai Tzvi, 1665, he realized that he only came to see Natan Azati because he was sick. He had a manic depressive. So Natan Azati was a Baal Moksin, so he came to get him a bracha. But just after that, Natan Azati said, aha, this is the Mashiach I have been waiting for. And they go together to spread the messianic message. And then this thing sticks, because he was unbelievable, Natan Azati. Natan Azati is able to convince, he was very charismatic, was a big Talmid Chacham. He goes to spread the message. We have sworn that people attribute to Natan Azati, and the people use it. Perhaps Chemdes Hayomi, or the Chemdes Hayomi might be Natan Azati. He was a big Talmid Chacham. So he goes, and the first thing they do, cancel Tisha B'Av. They had a proclamation that you don't fast Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is now a holiday. and they go into the tikkunim, that you have to go and stay up at night, have tikkunim. And he says Gaza is going to be the next Yerushalayim, because it's not the Azafi. Aza, right? Gaza is today, Aza is the next Yerushalayim. And they go to spread this message across. And now you're going to see that this actually spreads like wildfire, because he's very charismatic, and as much crazy things that he did, they saw craziest things before. I told you, this fits in with Kabbalah. The whole thing, the whole world is crazy. So this fits in with the Ruach HaZman. So they go, but the amazing is the message gets across everywhere. Goes to Amsterdam, you're going to see, and Amsterdam, which was the Jews, the Sephardic Jews that came to the New World, right? They came, the Sephardic Jews, they were in Spain, they were expelled, if they had to convert or expelled. So the Jews that actually maintained Yiddishkeit, they went to Portugal, except for Turkey. They went to Portugal. In Portugal, they were forcibly baptized by King Jerome. In 1516, there is the famous pogrom in Lisbon, and the Jews decided to leave, and they went to Amsterdam, because Amsterdam was a freedom of religion. So they go to Amsterdam, they're very successful Saladin, but they were, as they lived as Christians for a while, because in Portugal they were forced. So they were expecting Mashiach, because all the Christians were expecting Mashiach. So in Amsterdam, this message, as you'll see, gets very much invoked. In Poland, it gets very much involved, because in Poland, people went through everything that happened in the Poland, in the Luge, and the Poland, the Ukraine, and the Cossacks. People were expecting. People were in such trouble. They were expecting Morocco. And this is actually, we find today that they actually in South America got the message. And that was only 1 year, 1666. 1666, as I told you, the fifth monarchy in London, they're also expecting Mashiach. Now the Londoners are expecting Mashiach, and they saw the Jews are back. Now everybody's expecting Mashiach in 1666, and this is the year of expectation. I'll tell you something very interesting. I did my research, my master's I did on the school in Amsterdam, or the yeshiva in Amsterdam called Etz Chaim. And Etz Chaim is a school that stayed for a yeshiva that was very successful. Spinoza learned by there, Aram Zakut, the Pimentel, which Minchas Koyen learned. I mean, unbelievable people. And they had great records. But you should know that in 1666, everybody's expecting Mashiach, and Amsterdam was like full of this idea. But after, we're going to see that when they saw that this was not real, they cleaned up all the records. So I went there to the records of the yeshiva, and the records of the community, there's not one mention about the Soviet Union. But if you don't have, you know, something, when you try to, if you do any accounting, right, you could do and realize that to erase your tracks on the accounting doesn't work. You know something, the yeshiva had the idea the following, that the treasurer of the yeshiva had to maintain the yeshiva on a solid footing. You could only spend what you had. So in other words, you had to maintain balanced budget. They had a balanced budget. Forensic accounting, I need for my thing a forensic accounting. There was only 1 year that the yeshiva blew the budget. They actually, the collections came down a lot, and the expenditures went through the roof. You know what year was it? 1666. Because they thought Mashiach is coming. So what the purpose? Let's spend the money, not collect anything. In 1667, the forensic accounting showed the yeshiva did a new rule that the treasurer of the school had to sign a personal guarantee that if he blows the budget, he has to sell his own house to make up the budget. Because 1666 is the only year the yeshiva blew the budget. But it's not all. We know Helmand of... There is a famous diary of a woman in Poland. Also, she says, in our town, everybody stopped. In Smyrna, he went back to Smyrna. You'd go to Smyrna. Smyrna, I told you, had to throw them out. With Nathan Azad, he went back, and he actually was able to convince the Knesset. But you're going to see the Godol Hador of Smyrna, he was able to convince. So he went back to Smyrna. And Smyrna, which was in Izmir, was a huge port. We know the records. The port went down to zero, the activity, because the Jews decided they're not working, they're going to go all over Israel. And the people had tikkunim, they have sworn, if you come, you can buy us a tikkunim, the people read Mashiach is coming, that's it. So forget about anything else, we are going to spend the money, we're not going to make any money, we're going to sit and learn all day long, and that was happened. This is 1666. Now in 6066 he decides he's going to back to Constantinople to be able to really overturn the Islam and to be Baal HaShamayim. So he goes there, but the Rabbonim Constantinople did not. They realized that something is wrong, so they went to the Sultan Ahmed Pasha and they said, listen, this guy is trying to overturn you. And he calls you a dragon and he's going to overturn you, and you have to be very careful. So he got imprisoned in Gallipoli. In November 1666, the Sultan tells me you have two choices. You die or you convert to Islam. And he converted to Islam in 1666. In 1666, imagine all the people waiting for Mashiach. Mashiach just converted to Islam. And that was the end of it. So imagine the aftermath of what happened to this. But just for you to get an idea, okay, what happened. In Smyrna, in 1665, I told you, he was kicked out of Smyrna. He comes back. The Knesset Agdola, Reb Chaim Ben Benisti. Reb Chaim Ben Benisti is the Godel Hador, and he, Anata Nazat, who is a big Mekubal, he gave him enough reasons to believe that he was right. So in Echnam, he went, and he brought him back. And we have the records. Reb Chaim Ben Benisti, when he heard that he converted to Islam, he said it was a huge shock for him. Right? This happened. Now, in Amsterdam also. In Amsterdam, this is Reb Yitzchak Abuab da Fonseca. Reb Yitzchak Abuab da Fonseca was the Rav of Amsterdam at that time. He was a Brazilian, right? He was the Rav in Brazil for 1642 to 1654, when the Dutch ran Brazil, when the Portuguese overtook from the Company of the West Indies. He went back to Amsterdam, and he became in 64, 1666. He becomes the Rav. He becomes the Rav of Amsterdam, and he was waiting for Mashiach to come. He was somebody who was very he was the Rav of Amsterdam, and he was waiting for Mashiach to come. And this is the story we're going to see of Mashiach to come. And he, in the end, you'll see that this was crazy, but it wasn't such a crazy idea. Who are the people who actually found out that he was Mashiach? Very few. Because he was, all people who were involved in the Kabbalah thought that these Kabbalistic ideas were very true. The one is Rabbi Yaakov Sasportas. Rabbi Yaakov Sasportas in Spanish means six doors. This is his picture. He's in the Museum of London. And there is a great book on him called The Dissident Rabbi by Yaakov Dweck. Just came out the book from Yale University Press. He was the one who was a Chabad and said, you guys are completely crazy. I remember Rav Shach, so Rav Shach passed away. In his Levaya, they say he's the Rabbi Yaakov Sasportas of the generation, because he also was going against Messianic movements. He was the one who was, and he wrote, and here you have the book. He wrote a book exposing everybody who was involved with Mashiach. Because after the conversion, everybody else, as you know, decided to say, okay, I never believed him, and etc. So everybody turned cold. So he wrote a book called Tzitzat Novelzi. This book is the most rare book because people went nuts. Because this is how we know the story. Because he wrote the story, saying these people and all the stories. So in the end, they decided to create a summary and to do a clean copy called Kitzur Tzobel Betzi. And here, I'm going to show you, and you'll be able to see. So this is the original Kitzur Novelzi. This is the Kitzur that takes the, and this is from one of the rarest originals of his book, of he exposed it. This is where the story of Shabbat is going here. This is called Tzitzat Novelzi, where Yaakov Sasportas complains to everybody. And here you're going to see, if you want to see afterwards, and you could pass around, just be careful. This is the picture of how people saw Shabbat Zvi Nazati. This is from that time. This is a etching from that time, from the year 1666, right? Where people see how they viewed and how they imagined Shabbat Zvi. So everybody thought about it. I'm telling you, but the only one that Yaakov Sasportas. Yaakov Sasportas comes back, and he becomes the God of the Lord. Yes.
Where is the Chatzvi?
If you pass it around, just be careful, please. Look at it, you'll see, this is not a picture, this is the actual portrait at that time in Amsterdam, how they saw, how they imagined Chacham Tzvi to come. Now, what's the aftermath? Energy, people were aiming Mashiach to come in 1666. Trust me, this doesn't go away. Just because they got converted to Islam, the energy is called, the genie is out of the bottle. What happened afterwards? This story of Chacham Tzvi, this story of Shabbat Tzvi becomes one of the watershed movements in the beginning Messianic movement. In Amsterdam, the Rav of Amsterdam, Yitzchak Abuab, thought, imagine, we just, the whole community is let down. So that fervor, that energy, they decided to build a show. The Spanish-Portuguese show in Amsterdam is called in 1675. It's called that show in the Spanish-Portuguese is the biggest edifice, and they built it in format of the Pesach English. I was going to bring the book here, I forgot, there was a book that it came out that day saying, we are building this show as a Pesach English. They did 7 days, like Hanukkah Sabbath of 7 days. They, in other words, they channel, you know, something, instead of having the full Beit HaMikdash, we're going to have a small Beit HaMikdash. That was the idea how they did it in Amsterdam.
What's called the Snoga?
That is the Snoga. This is the Snoga. And the Snoga, why is so important the Snoga? Because you know that the Zohar, the same Zohar, calls the following. He says, why is a soul called Eshnoga? So he says, it's called Eshnoga because Eshnoga was Aviv. That's what the Zohar says. So Rabbi Yaakov Emdin, in his Pirush, the Yafendim, right after, it says, Eshnoga, where in Chazal is a shul called Eshnoga? It says, the shul is not called Eshnoga, the shul is called Esnoga. That's why they're talking about the Esnoga. That's why he says the parts of the Zohar are Spanish from much later. The Esnoga. That's why it's called Esnoga. Because the Esnoga, the Zohar is called Eshnoga. So this is it. This is Rabbi Yaakov Emdin says, yes, Esnoga is called Eshnoga because of this. But this is the Snoga. So you see, that's how they did it. Now, what else happened afterward? The aftermath. In Amsterdam, there were people who still believed in Shabbat Tzvi. We know Abraham Miguel Cardozo. He's the brother of Isaac Cardozo. Isaac Cardozo was a doctor, one of the harshest people in the community. And Yoshan wrote his dissertation on Isaac Cardozo. His brother was totally fakoif. He says, Mashiach needs to convert to Islam. Because he wanted to take Islam and to be massacred Islam, and he had a whole idea of why it had to be. So people believed in it. But then we're going to see that this idea of the false messiahs became the hunting the witches. What happened? In the 18th century now, there is a guy who comes to Amsterdam and writes a book called Ozel Elokim, Nehemiah Chiyun. Nehemiah Chiyun writes a book of Kabbalah called Ozel Elokim, which is a fascinating book. And the Rav of Amsterdam, again, of Shlomo Ayalon, is very for the book. And said, this guy is a Mashiach, and etc. And Rabbi Yosef Ergas, and here we have, I'll tell you something. This is also a very interesting book. You're going to see here. You'll be able to read it. This is called the Tzad Nachash, because his name was Nehemiah Chiya Chiyum. And Chiya is Nachash. So Rabbi Yosef Ergas write a book called Catching the Snake. This is the book with his record, and he's the one that talks about that this book is again false Kabbalah. They're taking Kabbalah, they're distorting it, and he's putting Christianity. He talks about the triple head. It's called the Kesher HaShlishi, and it's Christianity. And the Rav of Amsterdam was for it. He says, no, it's not Kabbalah. So they went to the Rav of the Ashkenazim. Who was the Rav of the Ashkenazim in the 18th century? The Godel Hador, the Chacham Tzvi. Chacham Tzvi is called Chacham Tzvi, even though Chacham is the name Sfaradi, because the Sfaradim held the Chacham Tzvi. So they went to the Chacham Tzvi, and the Chacham Tzvi looks at it and says, this is clear. This is Christianity. But the Rabbonim of Amsterdam and all the people decided to say, listen, this is crazy. And they says, the Ashkenazim don't like the Sfaradim, that's why they're doing this. And they ran the Chacham Tzvi out of the town. So that's why the Chacham Tzvi goes to London, to the Dovinitum. This is the famous story, right? That they were the great portrait. This is it. Because the false Messiah, Mashiach. Who was the one who was running against this? Is something called, as you'll see, Rav Moshe Chagiz. Rav Moshe Chagiz, Fatemet, he is the Kanoi, the Rav Yaakov Sasportas, who is hunting all the. There's a great book by Sheva Kalbach called The Pursuit of Heresy, that he decides to look into all the Mashiach, all the false Mashiach. And so this, all the looking, the community in Amsterdam accepts him, God Lador. They went to Chacham Tzvi. Chacham Tzvi says, this guy is a Apikoires, he's a Christian, he's run out of town. Today, we know that clearly he was a closet Christian, right? Christianity to the Zohar, so this is a false Messiah. But at the same time, there was in Padua, another person was also very strange. Who was that? Ramchal. So the Ramchal also writes, and I have for you all the writings, the original writings of the Ramchal. You have to read the story. If you read the stories of the Ramchal says there's a malach. I'm going to just tell you the story. Somebody writes to, Moshe, to his rabbi a letter about the Ramchal. The Ramchal at that time, like he was 18 years old. And he writes and he says, Otzina Kadisha, he should know that Ramchal, when he was 14 years old, he knows all Kisvei Ariza, Baal Peh. And he says, I'm with him for a month. And you should know that there is a malach that comes to him and says that he's the Gilgul of Rabbi Akiva ben Yosef Rabbi Akiva, and he decided that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants him to continue the Zohar. So he writes the continuation of the Zohar. The Zohar has 50 tikkun and brachos, by 50 tikkun. So when Rav Moshe Hagiz looks at this, he says, oh my God Almighty, now in Padua in Italy, there is another Sabbatim. And he goes against it, and this is the story of the Chamzik. But very similar stories of the aftermath of these false people. The Oz Lelukim and the Ramchal. The Oz Lelukim, today we know there's a Christian, the Ramchal is Kodesh Vetor. If you know the story of the Ramchal, I'm going to just because there's a Chavur coming up now. The Ramchal is unbelievable. The Moshe Chagiz decides again, very funny, right? The Oz Lelukim, which is the Chemechiyum, respected until they found out that there was a hoax. But the Ramchal, they went against him, and they actually threw him out, and all his books, they were supposed to be burned. But his Rebbe, Maharosh Avinam Basani, went to see the letters, decided he's not going to burn it, he's going to bury them. And he had to go to Amsterdam, to work in the yeshiva in Amsterdam, that just told you that yeshiva that buried the tracks, Yetz Chaim, and he was a diamond cutter. And he wrote, but he was supposed to write everything without having anything of Kabbalah. Otherwise, he would be put in Cherem and he could not even go to Binyan. So he writes everything else in what's called the Amsterdam without any Kabbalah. People, that was the greatest gift that Moshe Chagiz gave to the Jewish people. Because the Ramchal, during his Padua world, wrote Kabbalah things which are maybe five people in this world that would be able to know. And he wrote a play. He was a big writer. He wrote a play called Oz Lelukim. When he went to Amsterdam, he wrote books, the Mesilat Yesharim, without Kabbalah. But the Groh, when he saw that, he said, you know something? All the Kabbalah of Padua is buried into his forum of Amsterdam without anybody knowing. And you could see the different plays, because he wrote a play paralleling the play of Padua. It's called Le Sharim Tehila. So Le Sharim Tehila is a play in Amsterdam, which is exactly the same thing as the play in Padua, just hidden. So because of the Maram Chagiz, they thought he was a false Mashiach, he was forced to write books that we can relate to. And afterwards, the Groh is the one who validated the Ramchal. The Ramchal was today, is the God alert. And they actually found all of his written manuscripts. These manuscripts were on earth and not taken away. And today we have the Datum Note and all of this. The books are, so you realize that because of Shabbatzi, Maram Moshe Chagiz went against Ramchal and he forced Ramchal to bring Torah to the Jewish people, and he became the greatest rabbi to the Jewish people. Today there is every yeshiva learns Mesilat Yesharim. Had it been continuing to be in Padua, nobody would learn his stuff. So you realize that. And by the way, we are going to see, if you know, Gershon Sholem says this is what started Hasidut. Hasidut was the word Poland after that. Why? Because the rabbis were discredited, so it was easy to rebel against it. The Kabbalah was something expected, magic was something expected, and the Messianic fervor was there, so it was ready for Hasidut, Hasidut Nagam. So the aftermath, as much as Shabbat was a crazy story, he created Messianic movements. In the beginning of the shul in Amsterdam, that becomes, that's the only shul that survived the war. You realize that every shul, Stoyser says that it survives to Mashiach, he means that this shul is going to have special kedusha that stays to Mashiach. One of them is the shul in Amsterdam, the Nazis never destroyed. The Ashkenazi shul, the Chacham Tzvi shul, was destroyed. But the Sfardi, the Snoga, was never destroyed, stayed. So that is direct of itself, Shabbat Tzvi. I wrote to, because nobody says, but that was my, I wrote a paper for Yosef Shalom showing that the shul in Amsterdam, in my view, I thought that the shul in Amsterdam is really the Mikdash Mat replacing the fervor. And it's, I think it was the only A plus that yes, I am being endorsed by Shukhaim Shalom. He agreed that this is a good idea. But that's it. And then the Ramchal, right? The Ramchal and the Chacham Tzvi. They realized the Chacham Tzvi, because of the story of those little kids, right? He was thrown out. He goes to Amsterdam. I'm sorry, he goes to London. And in London, he validates a David Nito in the famous controversy. And he wrote his most famous Tshuva. He wrote in London to validate Rav London, as we said. And then Chassidut, so as much as Shabbat Tzvi was a crazy thing for 1 year, the effect of the Jewish history has been very, very profound. And even though it was a crazy Mashiach, they didn't come, Chevli Mashiach and the spirit of Mashiach did come from there. There's Shul in Amsterdam, the Ramchal, no Historia, Chassidut, and perhaps also the idea that the Chacham Tzvi goes to the
Ramchal is buried next to Rabbi Akiva, 40 years.
Ramchal died in Akko. The tradition is, we don't know, but the tradition is, and that's what we have, that he was buried next to Rabbi Akiva because he was in Rabbi Akiva. That's what he says in the letters, you see, that he believed he was in Rabbi Akiva, that he came to fix the 40 years of Rabbi Akiva in the Amoris. And the interesting part of it is because Ramchal did die at the age of 40, right? He lived from 1750, so he died at the age of 50. So at the age of 22, he already said, the Malach told him, you are Rabbi Akiva, that you came here for to fix up the 40 years, and therefore you are the only person allowed to continue the Zohar. And he did continue the Zohar. We have today. If you come, you have something that called the Tikkun HaKadoshim. So thank you very much.